Introducing Macintosh. It does all the things you'd expect a personal computer to do. It does a lot of things you wouldn't expect a personal computer to do. And it does some things no other computer has ever done before. Of course, to do all this, you will have to learn to do this. Macintosh, the computer for the rest of us.
Best 30 plus minute Apple conversation you're gonna hear all week long. I'm your host, Arifon Elijah. Join me today. You know him, you love him, but the queen, she can't stand him. Leander Caney is here.
How'd you know that?
Well, I know that you're not allowed back in the country. Yeah, you gotta sneak in wearing a disguise. I know that much. I know there was like some national celebration when you left, so I just assumed that it was because of something that happened between you
right.
and the Queen.
It was like when the Kiwi 2, right? You know, ducks, right? And there's all these ribbons and everyone's waving. So it was in the opposite. It was like when I was leaving.
I saw some picture of you next to her and you were laughing and she looks absolutely horrified. So I know something happened long time ago before you left. Well, Lewis is not here. He says he's at jury duty, but I got to admit, Leander, I saw a picture on his Instagram and he was wearing these big Mickey ears and he was on Splash Mountain going down. He had the biggest smile on his face. So
yeah,
I'm not sure what the deal is with that, but you should check on him. And then Buster is most likely dead. We don't know where he is. And I'm serious about that. I actually don't know if he's still living.
we haven't seen hide nor hair of him for weeks.
We haven't seen or heard from Buster. Yeah, it's probably been months now. So just for those of you that have been listening for a while, Buster will eventually be back. I think he's living in his van and he doesn't have internet access. Reliable internet access. And he's just living it up. He's driving all around. I think he's in New Mexico right now. I was telling Leander before we started the show that I saw a picture of him in a leather loincloth that it looks like he handmade himself. So he's living at one with nature. He's having a great time. He's got his dog with him. And he looks like he's doing well. Eventually he will come back, but eventually, every once in a while he shows up and he publishes a story on Colt Max. So we know he's still alive. We just don't usually know where he is.
Right.
But it doesn't matter because we've got an amazing show for you guys. And I don't use that word lightly. This is going to be one of the best shows we've ever done. Let me tell you what we're talking about. Maybe I oversold that just a little bit. Maybe a little
more. No, come on. We can rise to the challenge. We'll do it.
I hyped it up. Yeah, probably more than I should have. We got to talk about the HomePod. We missed this story last week because we recorded actually right before this news was announced. The HomePod got a price cut. This is a big deal. I just did a video on my YouTube channel about all the things I love about the HomePod, my 9 months with my stereo HomePods, which I'll link to in the show notes if you're interested, or you can go to YouTube and just search Arifon Elijah. It should come up. And I absolutely love my HomePods, and they're even cheaper than they were now. So we'll talk about that. The biggest MacBook in years could debut in 2021. I should say MacBook Pro. This is according to Ming-Chi Kuo. Quo on the Pro. He says it's coming and it's going to be a big one. So I'm very excited about this. We'll talk about it. I don't want to set anyone's nips at full nuclear levels where they might burst. But there is a story that's out that says Apple might be resurrecting the MagSafe connector, and not just for MacBooks, MacBook Pros, but for many of their devices. They're working on something. I know. Get your Band-Aids ready. Tape them on now. I don't want you to stain your shirt. We'll talk about that. And then we're going to wrap up with a very special segment. This is a outtake from Leander's Tim Cook book, Inside Apple's Factories. You won't believe the insane size and scope, the mind-boggling scale of Apple's factories and how much money they spend on capital equipment, that type of thing. This is something that Leander had to cut out of his book because his book was just so packed full of good, juicy stuff. So he's gonna wow us at the end of the show with some facts and figures and stories about Apple's factories. Before we dive into the news, Let me say thank you to Gabe and Brian from the Tech Meme Ride Home podcast for supporting this episode. For two decades now, techmeme.com has been the website that people in the tech industry visit every day, sometimes multiple times a day, to keep up with the latest tech news. And the Tech Meme Ride Home podcast takes what techmeme.com is good at and distills it into a podcast form. It's kind of like what we do here. They take the headlines, the same up-to-the-minute news, but they add context and conversation around what happened today in the world of tech. It's Silicon Valley's water cooler podcast, and it's how you can stay in the know if you are interested in technology. It's a daily show, so you get it every single day. They post around 5 p.m. Eastern time each afternoon. It's 15 to 20 minutes long, so very digestible. They talk about top stories, top tweets, conversations around all of those things. Check it out in your podcast app. Just search for Ride Home. Give it a listen. Subscribe to the Tech Meme Ride Home podcast. And you can check it out in any podcast app. Just search for Ride Home. Also, I should mention this more often. We always appreciate, for our own podcast, The Cultcast, people go and review us in the iTunes store. We never bring this up, but people are always constantly reviewing our podcast, but it helps us tremendously. It increases our rank in the iTunes store, so people see our podcast. And our podcast, look, I don't want to brag, but our podcast is always within the top 100 top tech podcasts, usually more towards the top, sometimes in the middle, but it depends on the news cycle. And a big part of our lofty position is because you guys often leave good reviews for us, 5-star reviews. And hey, if you want to leave a criticism, maybe you're like, this show isn't what it used to be. It's gone downhill. Believe me, I understand.
Put it on the Accidental Tech Podcast page and we'll see it there, right?
Make sure you stop there, or you can leave it on our alternate page, the Vergecast page, right.
That's a good place to put it too, right?
My name is Nilay Patel, and I think you guys all suck, so just go ahead
and
leave
it there.
Make sure you
give it 1 star, and
can they do negative stars? You should try it. -1 star. Actually, before we jump into the news, I was just noticing as well, iTunes has dramatically redesigned the podcast pages online. So if you want, you can actually listen to a podcast on the iTunes webpage there, and you can read the show notes. I know it's incredible. It's only taken them, I think, 12 years to do this. The web pages look a lot better for all the different podcast pages on iTunes. I don't even know what to call it. Is it like, I guess it's like the iTunes website. I'm not even sure what these sites are called. But you know, every podcast has its own page, iTunes page, I guess, where you can go and subscribe and that type of thing. And now you can actually listen to podcasts online and read the show notes and stuff. So it's pretty cool. So for all your favorite podcasts, you can actually see all that stuff there, right there online. A lot of people don't even know how to access the show notes. So I think it's probably good for that reason. And I should check to see if we can actually link people to specific episodes, because believe it or not, we've never been able to do that. Apple only lets you link to the podcast page itself and not to individual episodes. Huh. I keep waiting for Apple to bring podcasts. I could do a whole entire show about this into the 21st century. They need to make iTunes and the podcast section specifically more like YouTube. I have all these ideas. Tim Cook, ping me on iMessage and let's talk about the changes that could be made, because I got lots of ideas. But let's start with this just real quick. There was a price cut on HomePod in the US and other countries last week. You probably have heard about this. Apple permanently slashed the price of HomePod by $50. So it used to be $350, which, by the way, you could always find these on sale. If you paid $350 for these, you were buying them direct from Apple. Virtually everybody else was having sales on them. And I saw them over Black Friday as low as $250. And now they're officially $300 at Apple, which means this holiday season, I can all but guarantee you're going to see these for $200, maybe $225. And the HomePods for that price are a really good buy, in my opinion. I mean, I paid maybe $600 for the both of mine. And again, I just did a 9 months living with the stereo HomePods video on my YouTube channel where I go over everything that I like. And there is some stuff that I don't like, admittedly. In fact, there were some criticisms that Lewis had about the HomePods that at first I said, no, you're just trying to come up with something. That's actually not a real criticism. And then I listened to the HomePods again and I was like, oh, those golden ears. I should never have questioned those golden ears. He was right.
Yeah.
And so check out my video. I'll link to it. But how are you liking your HomePod or your HomePods, Leander? Are you still actually using it or them?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I listen to it all the time. Yeah.
They're unbelievable, aren't they?
Yeah, they're great. Yeah, I really, you know, the sound quality is fantastic. And Siri, you know, is really good. You can shout across the room. It usually works.
Yeah. The sound quality is key, though. It's still, not to give too much away from my review, but the sound quality continually surprises me even now. They sound so good, especially in stereo mode. You put two of them together and they sound better than the sum of their parts, and they create what I have coined the envelope of power. So you put them one to your left, one to your right. I have them both in front of me on my desk here. And the first time I did a first listen test of my stereo HomePods, which is also on my YouTube channel, I couldn't believe it. The sound quality that they were able to create, it puts an envelope around you and you can't even tell where the sound is coming from. And the bass that flows out of these HomePods is not some flabby, soggy Beats by Dr. Dre bass. It's it's accurate, it's precise, it's musical, it's warm. And that's hard to do. I feel like a lot of speakers show their pedigree in that area of sound, where the bass usually just sounds soggy and gross and it kind of falls apart, but not on the HomePods. And here, I said I wasn't going to go into my entire review, and here I am
going into my entire review.
Anyway, I think that they're well worth the price, especially if you can get them for even less than $300 a piece, which you can do very easily if you're willing to look on eBay and stuff.
There's a bunch of refurb ones. I was looking on eBay for a couple hundred bucks. I think about $225.
Really?
They might even be cheaper now, yeah.
Holy
cow. There was someone
who
was selling some for like $70, $60.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
I know, I tried to buy like, and it was, they said they had like about 10. I tried to buy all 10 or something. eBay crapped out and said, you can't make this purchase. So I think
they said, we're sorry, this person is clearly trying to rip you off, and we won't allow you to do this because then you're going to make us pay you back.
I like the refurb stuff though on eBay, you know, like, there's often people, you know, they return something to Apple, don't they? They get it out and they return it, and then it goes to some reseller who often has like a whole, you know, pallet load of these things, and then they offload them fairly cheap, and they have the same warranty as buying new, but for a lot less.
Absolutely, and if they have the Apple warranty and not a seller warranty, which I wouldn't necessarily trust, but if they actually had an Apple warranty, oh, why not?
Right.
You might as well just buy it for the lowest price that you can find, because Apple's going to stand behind it.
Yeah.
Anyway, just a PSA I wanted everyone to be aware. Let's talk about the biggest MacBook Pro debut in years. Ming-Chi Kuo, the only Apple analyst that ever gets anything right. The opposite of Gene Munster. Basically the opposite of Gene Munster. Boy, we're really in the weeds now when we're making Apple analyst jokes. I've been doing
this.
I
bet everyone gets it, though.
Yeah, I hope so. That's what makes this community fun. Is if you get that joke, well, welcome to the show. You've come home. So we've talked about this before. I believe that Ming-Chi Kuo was referring to the 16-inch, possibly even larger, possibly 17-inch MacBook Pro. And this MacBook Pro was supposed to arrive in 2019. Well, unfortunately, he's saying that this model won't be out until 2021, but there are some interesting parts of this report. He said that along with this new MacBook Pro, which is supposed to be a total redesign, that will be exciting, that as well as the MacBook Pro, we're supposed to receive a new iPad and a new external display that will probably be the 6K display that we've talked about before. But here's what's exciting about this is Apple and other manufacturers are working on micro LED. This is like the next evolution of display technology. Everyone's working on this. And apparently the new MacBook Pro, the new iPad, the new display are going to have micro LED built in, which would be incredible in my opinion, because I thought we were 5, 6, 7 years away from this technology. You keep hearing people say this technology is very hard to perfect, and they can't even build these micro LED displays with robots yet, because the LEDs have to be positioned so precisely so that when you're looking at this display, the light coming through the display isn't off in any way, because you would be able to perceive that, and of course you wouldn't like it. So you might be asking yourself, well, what is the big deal about micro LED displays? Well, it's kind of esoteric, but I've tried to distill it down into here into the most salient point. So first of all, it has all the strengths of OLED, which is right now currently the best display technology that there is, although it does have some weaknesses. So the iPhone 10 and newer, except for the iPhone 10R, so the 10, 10S, 10S Max, and the Apple Watch, they all have OLED displays. And the reason is because they have self-illuminating pixels that, so you can have perfect black levels. So only the pixels that need to be illuminated will be, and then everything else is perfectly black. So you have, you know, perfect contrast levels. They also have incredible color saturation and accuracy, but they degrade over time. It's an organic compound, and so it doesn't have the same brightness over time. It degrades in brightness, it degrades in color accuracy, and it doesn't have the best brightness to begin with. LCD displays, LED panels have much better brightness and are better for HDR and that type of thing because OLEDs just can't get very bright. And of course, the other problem is with OLEDs is burn-in. So if you leave something on the display for too long, like let's say you're playing video games and there's a heads-up display that just sits on your screen for the entire time that you're playing, that can get burned into the screen. And then when you go to view a different image, you will still see the remnant of whatever was sitting on your display for too long sitting there in the corner. And sometimes that burn-in is permanent. You can't get rid of it. In fact, this was a common flaw with plasma displays. And I have a plasma television still. And I have burn-in on part of my panel whenever there's a white screen.
What's burned in? What's it an image of? Is it something saucy?
I don't want to tell you. I can't. It's a piece of a technology of some kind.
Looks like a carrot. The kids are like,
Dad, what's that, Daddy? Get out of here. Quick, change the channel. So whenever I have a white image on my screen, you can see it's like all these bright red pixels. It's like very blotchy on the screen. I don't even know what it is. It might just be that the panel is just old and it is not working as well as it used to. Anyway, all that to say, micro LED has the same brightness of LCD TVs, but it doesn't have any of the degradation or burn-in issues of OLED, which is why it's going to be the next phase of display technology. And apparently Apple is working out the manufacturing process and will have these micro LED displays included in the iPad, the MacBook Pro, and who knows what other products.
Why is it going so much bigger if it's micro LED? Why not stay at 15 and 13?
Well, I don't know if the size of the computer has anything to do with the display technology whatsoever. I just think that people may want a larger,
I see,
you know, laptop. Yeah. People, I still hear from people who have their 17-inch MacBook Pro. I used to have a 17-incher.
Yeah, right, yeah.
And they love it. They just want to have a bigger screen, and maybe Apple just thinks they can make, well, clearly they can make more money if they have a larger MacBook Pro. I mean, imagine the 15-inch is $3,000. That means a 17-inch will be what? $12,000. But that's only for 128 GB SSD. If you want more than that, then you're going to pay up. So I think a 17-inch would sell well, but what do I know? Clearly, Apple knows what their sales numbers were for their older 17-inch MacBook Pros. But
yeah,
so exciting news,
right? Yeah.
And of course, the complete redesign is also very exciting. What's that?
There's some bad news at the bottom. Coming out first half of 2021, by which time we'll be old and decrepit and probably dead.
Well, you'll definitely be dead. I'll probably just be old and decrepit. But I'll still be young enough to get my hands on this new MacBook Pro. Yeah, definitely. You won't make it to 2021, but some of us might. So there you go, 2021. So it's actually bittersweet news. We're going to get a redesigned MacBook Pro with a next generation screen, but 2021 is pretty far out, so it's a bittersweet story, but there you have it.
What kind of keyboards are going to have? That's a big question, right?
Yeah, it's going to be the fifth generation butterfly keyboard. And it's going to have not one, but two plastic layers underneath that Tim Cook swears have finally solved the keyboard issue.
Right, and then when the fans kick in, when the chips overheat, the fans kick in, and they've actually got it venting out through the keyboard, so it blows out all the crumbs, right, into your face.
Yeah, exactly. Which is actually a bonus if you live in colder climates, because it keeps your hand warm.
Talking about this, we should have got Graham on, Graham Bauer, right? Yeah. You know Graham, the columnist? He lives in Barcelona, British guy. Mm-hmm. He wrote a column last week. He used to have cancer, and he beat cancer. But now, you know, he has certain health, you know, like, it's, you know, he has ongoing health issues that he has to take care of. So he wrote a column about how living with a MacBook Pro is like living with a chronic disease, and he likened it to living with cancer. But kind of buried in there was like, he told the story, him and his husband, they both had MacBook Pros, and both their keyboards crapped out, and they would have to do crazy things like hold the MacBook upside down sometimes to, you know, get a key to work.
Mm-hmm.
And they both got them replaced, and they both used to work at a co-working space, and they would routinely in the morning put their MacBooks in their rucksacks, their bags, their laptop bags, you know, go to the co-working space and then put them in the bags on the way back. But this time around, after they both got them replaced, he started working at home more frequently. So he's working at home almost all the time while his husband goes to the co-working space. And his husband is putting, this time, put his MacBook Pro in a sleeve. And neither of them have had issues.
Wait, so, what do you mean? What kind of sleeve?
Well, like a, you know, like a, I don't know, what do you call them? Like a, you know, like a...
Do you mean a layer that goes over the top of your keyboard?
No, you actually put it in. You can get these sleeves now. It's like it's almost like an envelope, but it's made out of like leather or felt.
An actual MacBook Pro case?
Yeah. Haven't you seen these things?
Yeah, of course. But you're talking about the keyboards. I didn't know exactly what you were referring to.
He puts the whole MacBook in a sleeve before he puts it into his bag.
Uh-huh.
And he hasn't had any problems.
Interesting.
And Graham hasn't had any problems, mainly because his MacBook's staying at home, you know? It doesn't go into his bag. And so this led, anyway, cut a long story short, it led Graham to hypothesize that the problem is, you know, the crud you get in your bags.
Interesting.
So it was like, you know, if you do have a MacBook and you want to protect it, get a sleeve. You know, don't stick it in your bag with a bunch of, Parmesan cheese and stuff like that. You know,
with your Cheetos. Lunch.
Yeah.
Who does that anyway? That always shocks me. I absolutely baby my technology, especially my MacBook Pro. It's such an expensive machine. I would never just toss it into my bag with Deritrus floating around. I would put it in a sleeve just like he recommended.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Lewis and I, you know, we both leave, you know, we haven't had problems with our keyboards. And, I just do not put it in it. I don't take it out of the house that much, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's mainly, it's sort of set at home. It's my machine at home. And, you know, when I read this, I was like, he's onto it. He's cracked it. He's got it.
You know, like, by Jove.
And he was talking about, you know, how Apple's testing these things. You know, Johnny Ive and his pristine design studio, everything's like, you know, perfect and white, and his white room, you know, there's no dust anywhere, right? So he hasn't come across this. I'm not sure I believe that because, in fact, we're going to be talking about the outtakes here. And they have a whole team devoted at Apple to testing their equipment under, you know, extreme circumstances. That's why they make their own synthetic sweat to dunk things like headphones and AirPods into to make sure they can hold up. So they try to test, you know, as many scenarios as they can. And I'm sure sticking a MacBook in a bag and with a bunch of, like you said, Cheetos is one of the scenarios they do test. So I don't know. Anyway, I thought it was kind of like, maybe I'm the last person in the entire world to twig to this, that, you know, you should stick your MacBook in a sleeve if you don't want to get a dodgy keyboard. But I thought it was kind of like, yeah, you know, it resonated.
Well, it is an interesting theory. It would explain why some people seem to have keyboard problems again and again and again.
Right.
If it were a lifestyle problem where you're just tossing your MacBook Pro into your bag, or because I kept thinking, okay, there's something going on with their hands or the environment that they're using their MacBook Pro that is causing these people to have the same problem over and over again, over and over again. Because if Apple replaces your keyboard, the problem should be solved permanently if there was a problem with that keyboard.
Right.
And I know people say, well, there's clearly design issues built into the keyboard, and I think that's true. But why do some people not have any problems and some people have one problem after another?
Yeah,
it must be because of the way they're using the machine or carrying the machine or something.
Yeah.
By Jove! I think he's got it. That might be it.
Yeah.
That might be it. So yeah, don't just throw your MacBook Pro into your bag. And by the way, get yourself some Colt cloth. Keep your machine sparkling clean like I do. I clean my machine once a week, even though with the 2018 MacBook Pro, every time you touch it, it turns itself back on and starts beeping at you when you're trying to wipe down the keyboard. But keep your keyboard clean. Keep your screen clean. Take care of your technology, people. Come on, give me a break. You have a $3,000, $4,000 laptop. You want to treat it like a lady. Treat it nicely. Be a gentleman. Be nice to your machine. You know, treat it the way it deserves to be treated. Okay, let's see here. I think that covers all of the MacBook Pro. Oh, we got to talk about the MagSafe story. Leander.
Right. Yeah. So
don't you miss the MagSafe? Can I ask you? Don't you absolutely miss the MagSafe every day? Do you think about it? And it's like that. It's like, well, that girl that got away. You find yourself all of a sudden you're in the middle of doing something and then you're just thinking about MagSafe. You're like, what happened? I wonder what she's doing now. I wonder if she ever thinks about me.
Right. And she probably she doesn't. No, I'm like you. I don't think about the MagSafe all the time. Although it was good, you know, I got to admit it was good.
It was good.
But you've
so
got younger
good.
Kids, right? All my kids are grown up now. So, you know, I don't have those same the issues of, you know, them tearing around the house and knocking my
the kids? What about you tearing around the Cultimac world headquarters? No one ever
stumbling
trips over
around drunk?
Yeah.
When I come in that. After a night on the Stellas? Yeah. I've got good habits, you know, like, you know, of putting it away, uh-huh. out of harm's way. But, I don't think about MagSafe, but I did like it at the time. I remember, you know, what a big deal it was when it came out and how everyone loved it. But anyway, they might be bringing it back. Got new patent filings. They are looking at charging cables that attach to devices with magnets, and they just received a patent for the smart charging system for portable electronic devices. And it describes using magnets and cables to prevent damage that get yanked on. And it's, you know, of course, like the patent describes... the most important part, which is like, you know, it disconnects itself if an accident occurs. Quote, the connector can be disconnected from the portable electronic device by the charging component before the jolting event occurs.
Yeah, so they're quote. Saying that this, whatever technology they have, it actually will be able to sense a disconnection about to happen and then eject the cable.
What?
On its own. Yeah, so it's not just
how can it sense it?
I don't know. That's what the patent is for.
Mad.
So read the quote. The connector can be disconnected from the portable electronic device by the charging component before the jolting event occurs.
Whoa.
So it's like... some type of Rasputin connection where it's like, I sense an incoming Leander Caney. He just had his seventh Stella. Let's eject the power cable.
Right. Psychic safe. Yeah.
Yeah. Psychic safe. There you go.
Well, is it like... You know, they used to have a patent on hard drives. You know, if you dropped your hard drive,
yeah.
It had an accelerometer that detected the fall, mm-hmm. and it parked the heads before the computer hit the ground.
Yeah,
remember that?
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is it? I think
computers. I think hard drives still have that technology built in. At least some of them do.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. It sounds very similar to that, doesn't it? Yeah.
So this is you know, and here's the other wrinkle. It's not just MagSafe was just for MacBooks, but this one is going to be for all kinds of devices, including, quote, smartphone, wearable device. What kind of wearable device do you have a cord plugged into it, you know, when you're wearing it? Anyway.
that's a good point.
Smartwatch, tablet, personal computer, and the like.
I just got to say this about this story right here. Baby.
Who's that, Hulk Hogan?
Ooh, brother. Get the Band-Aids out. I hope they're somewhere nearby because I'm going to be at full mast until tomorrow after reading this story. I hope they bring back the MagSafe. They added to all the different devices, and you might be able to use the same kind of charging technology for... now I'm just reaching for the stars here. Why not? The same kind of charging technology for the Apple Watch and for the iPhone and for the MacBook Pro. Have one charger to rule them all and then just spontaneously ejects when you come in. You're stumbling around or your kids are running around the house and hit your power cable.
Right.
This is the exact kind of technology I would love to see from Apple. I'm just happy that they're working on it.
Well, I think you mentioned a good point there. Like, you know, MagSafe, okay, that was great. I'd rather see them, you know, standardize on USB-C. Because frankly, you know, like, I don't, all the different cables, all the different, like, different connectors. Like, you know, I've got a MacBook and an iPad Pro, which both charge on USB-C. And, you know, I'd love to be able to use it, have my iPhone charging the same thing, and my headphones and all my other peripherals and stuff. You know, just everything on USB-C, everything. And then it just makes life a lot simpler. Like all these different, you know, I'm going to have to go on a trip. I'm going to New York next week for the launch of the book. I'm going to, you know, I already know I'm going to have to pack about 8 different chargers, you know, half a dozen different cables.
Especially now, because the computer uses one, the iPhone uses another. Literally, actually, when you think about it, this is pretty incredible. It just occurred to me. Every single one of my Apple devices uses a different charging input.
Yeah.
So phone is Lightning. Yeah. iPad is USB-C. Oh, I guess my MacBook Pro is USB-C too. Okay, never mind.
Well, there's you can get third-party cables. We've got one here, actually. A company sent it to us a few weeks ago. I think it's on Kickstarter. And they have, it's a USB cable with different magnetic ends, connectors at the end, at the other end. So it's USB-A at one end, you know, you can plug it into your computer or to a regular charging block. But then at the other, you know, it has like a little magnetic Lightning connector, a little magnetic USB connector, mini USB, USB-C. There's like a little bag of these things. I mean, it's probably going to, it was a kind of, it looked a bit fiddly, and I was like.
So it has a bunch of different magnetic charging tips, so to speak?
Yes, right. Oh. And the idea, I think, is that you leave the tip in the device. Right, so it just sits in there and it sits
that's
flush.
Pretty interesting, actually.
And then you just, you know, you connect it with a magnet there, and the magnet's pretty strong, and it does, you know, it has that kind of weird, that kind of magical, like a little magic, you know, snake. When it gets close, it just sort of leaps out of your fingers and makes the connection.
And you said it was fiddly, though. Are you testing the
tips were fiddly, but like I said, you leave them in. You're supposed to, I think, leave them in the device.
What's this thing called? Do you know?
It's across the other side of the room.
Oh, don't worry about it then.
Yeah.
If you like it, you can talk about it in a future show. And
yeah, okay.
Permit it. So there you go. The resurrection of MagSafe. Did you see that coming? I did not. So I was very happy to hear about this.
Because
this
is just a patent filing, right? So
it will probably never materialize.
Yeah. In case if someone else comes out with it, then they can sue him.
That might be why they're developing it, right? Just to make sure that no one actually ever uses MagSafe. Yeah. That was one of the pieces of technology that they aggressively defended. That's why you never saw any MagSafe clones, because Apple, from what I hear, from what I understand, they would go after people if you tried to use this technology.
Yeah.
And well, they protected it vehemently.
It's rich, because you know where they got it? You know they didn't develop themselves. You know where they got it from?
They didn't develop MagSafe themselves?
Well, the idea was came originally from Japanese rice cookers. They're pretty common in Japanese rice cookers, yeah.
Why would you need a magnetic breakaway cable on a rice cooker? It's on your kitchen counter.
You know, it's that's the perfect
place.
What
are they running on the counter?
Well, in Japan, they probably run the cable right across the kitchen, from one end to another. I don't know why, but anyway, it was like, it's a safety feature for like kettles and rice cookers, anything, you know, that was hot and full of like hot liquid.
Oh.
So it's fairly common. I think, you know, Zarajushi or whatever it is.
Yeah.
They had them, they're pretty common, I believe, on, you know, these kind of things in Japan. So when I did the Johnny Ive book, I mean, one of the designers told me that. So pretty sure that's where they got the idea.
So they stole it.
Yeah.
See, in my mind.
So no one else could do it.
Now that's a Steve Jobs move right there, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I love
that's
it.
That's how to do it.
I thought that he had an image of the technology in a dream and woke up and, you know, quickly called Johnny Ive and they sat up all night designing the MagSafe connector and all that. That's how
I
had always
envisioned
it.
Magnets, you know, forever. How many magnets does the new iPad Pro have? Like 21 or something crazy? And it's great. You know, it does. It's really clever, isn't it? I love the way that, you know, the keyboard and the covers, the folio covers and everything like attached to it, the pencil.
Yeah, I've got one of those folio covers that I bought on eBay and it's really cool. You just snap it right on and of course it doesn't protect worth a damn, but it's good if you have it in your backpack, but if you actually drop your iPad, your iPad's toast. It doesn't protect it whatsoever.
Right.
But it looks cool and it works pretty well. I really like it so far.
I've been using the keyboard, their keyboard, the iPad Pro keyboard, which does protect it, you know, when you close it up.
Mm-hmm.
So that one actually is really good. It protects front and back. And then, of course, you know, it's actually a nice stand. And the keyboard's not bad, too.
Have you tried the Logitech version of the iPad keyboard yet?
No, everyone's raving
about that. I keep hearing good things about that one, yeah. I thought that I guess we didn't review it. We might have covered when it was released or something. Anyway, okay, so let's go ahead and wrap up with inside Apple's factories, an inside look, the inside El Caney look at the unbelievable scale of Apple's factories. You said one thing in this story that I thought put this whole the whole scale of the factories into a really digestible bite, you said that to get an idea of how big Apple's capital expenditure is, or CapEx, Apple's spaceship, I can't even speak, why can't I speak? Apple's new spaceship campus in Cupertino, which is the fourth most expensive building in the world, cost the company an estimated $5 billion to construct. That seems low. Apple spends a similar amount of money every 6 months just on manufacturing equipment alone, which I was like, whoa, okay.
Now every 6 months, right?
Yeah, every 6 months, which is mind-boggling. And when you say they're spending it on manufacturing equipment, what does that mean? What are they buying?
Stuff like CNC machines, you know, for the unibody, for the iPhone, and the unibody enclosures.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they're carving these things out of, you know, solid chunks of aluminum, and you know, like a CNC machine. I think they could be like $1 million each. And I had stories, you know, they bought up the entire world's supply of like CNC machines, you know, for year after year after year, and put them in factories like, you know, in Asia, like Foxconn's factories. And these things are like, you know, the buildings are so huge, you can't even see the end of them. You know, it's as far as the eye can see. Machine after machine after machine. And then they'll be building after building after building, you know, because they're building these things on such a vast scale.
Huh.
So, you know, another way, good thing, you know, like I heard this statistic the other day as well. Like people say billion, right? They go, oh, billion, you know, billion, billionaire, right? You know, it doesn't really, it's hard to get your mind around that number. Like, do you know how long a million seconds is?
A million seconds. You mean like in minutes or hours?
Yeah.
I have not a single clue.
It's about 11 days.
Oh, okay.
11 days. Guess how long a billion seconds is?
It is 111 years.
It's 31 years.
Okay, I was only a little bit off.
So you go from 31, you know, from 11 days to like 31, 32, 33 years.
Uh-huh.
It's somewhere like that. 30, you know, like in the low 30s.
Uh-huh.
That's a big difference, you know, between a million and a billion.
Exponentially larger.
Yeah. So it's uh-huh. it's mind-boggling. And I don't even know what a trillion is. You know, like Apple's worth $1 trillion. You know, it's going to be like, how much is a trillion? Isn't it like 1,000 billion?
It's 1,000 billion.
Yeah.
I believe.
So it's you know, these are big numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you know, and you know, it's sort of comparable like to like an aircraft carrier, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this is in the story, like, you know, an aircraft carrier, which the Navy buys like once every 10 years or so, is $4 or $5 billion. And Apple's spending that kind of money every 6 months on equipment.
On manufacturing equipment?
Yeah.
Well, I guess what's interesting is, why do they have to keep spending it? You would think that they would have all the machines that they need. Why are they continually spending so much on these manufacturing machines? Don't they have enough manufacturing machines already? Can't they just call
them? You know, they keep changing the technology, right? So they keep on needing new machines, different machines, plus the growth of it as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the iPhone was, for the last 10 years, you know, it's slowed down the last 2 or 3 years. But before that, it was sort of doubling every year, the number of, you know, devices they were selling.
Mm-hmm.
And it's on the run of, I think, about 200 million a year now. But you know, every year they had to double the production capacity, so they were buying a lot of machines just to keep up with demand. But I think it's a lot of it has to do with, you know, the changing technologies. Like I said, we're talking about micro LED.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's going to be a whole bunch of new machines to make that. And if you're talking about, you know, putting that onto 200 million devices, and that's just for iPhones, you know, let alone all the computers and all the tablets are going to be doing. You know, that's, you're going to need a lot of machines to be able to reach that demand.
It's one of the things that became clear to me as I was reading this story. I'll link to this on Cult of Mac. It's just the cookbook outtakes. Is we always think about Apple as a computer company, as a design company, but, and this is Tim Cook's realm, the manufacturing that they do. They are a manufacturing company. That's what they do. They make products and they sell products. And I don't ever think about them in that regard, the fact that they have this immense expertise in building products at mass scale and then shipping them all around the world, which is a critical component of your business when you're selling products, right? Yeah. And that, I'm sure a lot of that makes its way or is included in your book, right? The magic that Tim Cook helped create within the manufacturing aspect of Apple.
I'm sorry, what?
What does Tim Cook do with Apple? The manufacturing prowess that Tim Cook has and contributed at Apple, that must be a significant portion of your book, right? And that's one of his biggest contributions to Apple.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this is why I'm doing all these outtakes, because a lot of this stuff got cut out, you know. I mean, this is the stuff that I was interested in, and I was I spent a lot of time researching, and you know, the editor and I decided that it kind of like it sort of tripped up the continuity of the book, you know, because there were these long, long passages about, you know, how the factories work, how they finance them, how, you know, Apple doesn't outsource stuff, you know, to Foxconn or to its suppliers. You know, like people think when they outsource something, they just give the contractor a blueprint, and the contractor goes ahead and makes it and then delivers the orders. You know, Apple's got this unique hybrid model where they're actually spending, you know, they're actually sort of the contractor often owns the factory and takes care of the workforce, but a lot of the machinery inside is being supplied by Apple, and that, you know, has, you know, part of that is because it's difficult for these contractors to come up with enough money to buy these, you know, enough machines to supply Apple's demand. Mm-hmm. It also, Apple gives more, you know, control over what the contractor is doing. Like, you know, it used to be pretty common for these factories to run shifts at nighttime, churning out, you know, counterfeit products for the black market using the exact same machines, you know, that they're using during the day to make legit copies. So this kind of, and it kind of allows Apple to, that's not probably the biggest problem, because they probably have, you know, other ways to stop that, but it allows them to, like, you know, stop, if they want to stop making a product, you know, then they have the power to do that because they own the machinery.
They can just take the machines away.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, one of the designers told me there's, like, you know, he said that there's a lot of factories where they're just, you know, they're idle. They're not running anymore. You know, there's a lot of surplus capacity. But it gives, you know, I mean, Apple spends, you know, it sends its engineers and Johnny Ive and the designers and these huge, huge teams of product design engineers, these manufacturing engineers, the whole operations team. There's armies of people that go over and spend and live over there, you know, live in these factories, helping these contractors make these devices and tweaking it and perfecting it. It's really, really involved. You know, it's not hands off at all. It's hybrid. It's like, you know, they're true partners. It's like a 50-50, you know, sort of partnership. Or probably actually sort of 70-30 Apple.
And does Apple design the machines as well?
Oh, hell yeah. You know, this is like, you know, one of the things I think that is really important to understand about the way Apple designs things is that they're designed to be manufactured in their millions.
Uh-huh.
And this is why, like, the pentalobe screws on the iPhone, right? The two screws that hold the iPhone together. Uh-huh. Like, they've had so much criticism about these screws because they say that it's, you know, Apple being control freakery and stopping you getting in to your phone to repair it yourself or to stop third parties repairing it. You know, it's They want to prevent you opening it up, but what I heard is that they are screws that are designed for robots. So they're part of the they're designed for the manufacturing process. So it's to allow a machine to screw the thing together really quickly. So, you know, a lot of the design process is actually designed for manufacturing. They design the thing to be manufactured, you know. So they very, very carefully take into account the manufacturing process and how these things are put together. You know, it's designed to be made in its millions.
Especially that story, particularly, it makes a lot more sense than, well, Apple's trying to stop you from opening it, because all you got to do is get a screwdriver that works on that particular screw. Right. How hard is that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You can buy them anywhere.
I think there's actually a wrinkle to that, because I think they actually patented that and prevented people from making it.
Oh, but yeah, I'm sure they still sell pentalobe screwdrivers.
Well, iFixit does. You know, if you buy a new screen from iFixit, they send you, you know, one of the a pentalobe screwdriver for you and a pair of regular screws, same size of course, but, you know, regular star headed screws for you to be able to do it again if you
to
want
do to. Repairs in the future
to make it easier. Yeah, but, you know, I believe that they were designed because it's easier for a machine to hold it. You know, like a machine couldn't hold a star shaped screw as securely as it could a pentalobe one.
It must be wild to be in one of those factories. It probably is similar to being in one of the factories that build the Terminators in Terminator 2, where they're just cranking out those cyborgs and all the machines are working by themselves and there's not very many people around.
That's the other thing that, you know, I found out is that actually at the moment, it's almost, you know, it's almost 100% hand built. Uh-huh. Like almost all the assembly, even of the subcomponents, is done by humans. And I thought that was kind of interesting. There's a long section in there about how the lines are set up and how they're designed. The golden line, you know, they design one line initially, and make it perfect and make sure there's no mistakes. And there's so many things that could go wrong. Uh-huh. You know, they're taking into account, like they found that they would, you know, sometimes there would be a whole bunch of mistakes, you know, like in the afternoon, like after you know, sort of a tea break or whatever. Mm-hmm. That's because the workers are coming back and they're a little bit tired and sort of getting towards the end of their shift. And so they just, you know, they try to, you know, and it would turn up like, you know, maybe like a couple of mistakes per worker, per shift. But you multiply, by the time you multiply that by, you know, millions of things, you end up with like thousands and thousands of devices, you know, that can't be used or that have to be repaired.
Right.
So it has this like massive knock-on effect. So they design the lines to be perfect. And then once they get this line down, you know, it's so everything, every single operation, every single movement, every single, you know, component is so carefully calibrated that they, you know, that they have to replicate that line perfectly. They don't change a thing. And then they replicate it, you know, over like, you know, maybe 100 lines to be able to, like, you know, at a factory or rather like a, you know, one of these, the Foxconn City, you know, where there's dozens of factories devoted to this.
I don't know if this is true, but I heard that Tim Cook gets really personally involved in these manufacturing lines, and he has this special horse whip that he uses, and he walks up and down and he just kind of like peers over your shoulder. If you're not putting the assembly together correctly, he lets you know. He'll make you nay. That's what I heard. Is that true?
Nay, that's right, totally true. Yeah. This is a southern upbringing, right? You know how he likes.
That's right. Yeah. They have a phrase for him in Chinese. I forget what it's called, but it means apple horseman. And, you know, he walks up and down. And just you. Anyway, that sounds like it probably is just a myth. Any other choice tidbits that you can share with us, Slander, before we wrap it up here? Well, something that will wow the people. Or anything that you found to be particularly interesting when you're doing your research?
You kind of caught me off there.
Is it because there's so much that's interesting that you're having a hard time choosing?
I thought it was interesting. You know, like this one that you're linking to, you know, it talks about how they set up the lines and, like, you know, the ramp. It just, you know, it sort of developed. I wasn't really aware of all the complexities of this, you know, like all the different things that can go wrong. These are complex devices. It's a very, very big supply chain. You know, they have to very, very carefully plan to make sure that, you know, because if they get a shortage of components, then the whole thing comes, you know, tumbling down.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they've actually managed, Apple has managed to, you know, really, really well these last 10 years, you know, not only, like, deliver these devices, but, you know, double the number that they're making every year. And it's super, super tricky to do that. And it takes 3 years or more, you know, for a new product to be... you know, to figure out how to make a product, you know, a complex product like the iPhone.
Yeah.
Saying that, you know, like, I think year after year, they don't spend 3 years model to model. They tweak it. But when they have a big design change, like the bigger screens, you know, it kind of took them like 3 years to figure out the industrial design process for that. You know, so when we were buying the, what was it, the 6 was the first big screen one?
Yes.
You know, they were already planning that back at when the 3 was coming out.
Hmm.
So, and it's just the scale of the thing, you know, was like, you know, really blew my mind. And like I said, there literally are armies of people that go out, you know, logistics, just to, you know, because there are so many engineers that are going out there. They have to have all these, they have to have all this support staff that could, you know, just to figure out what all the hotels are going to be staying at.
Right.
You know, all the cars, all the limousines.
Feeding,
you know,
everyone,
the,
yeah.
Yeah, the healthcare and blah, blah, blah. You know, it's like.
Oh, yeah. Huh.
It's massive. It's just such a massive operation. And I think, you know, this, I got a little bit of a peek into that, which kind of blew my mind. People complain about, oh, Apple's, you know, being ruined. It's rubbish. The butterfly keyboards, blah, blah, blah. Like, and they seem to think that, you know, this kind of stuff can be fixed really quickly and really simply. Mm-hmm. And in a small company that's only making a few, you know, with a tiny small business, it can be done. But with a company the size of Apple, you know, it's turning a massive tanker.
Yeah, they have to change the design, maybe change the tooling, change the training, change the lines,
right.
Hammer out all the details over again.
I know, yeah. They're perfectly capable of doing it. Excuse me, of course. You know, they're perfectly capable of doing it, but not, you know, as quickly as I think some people would like.
Yeah, well, that's why we're here. We're on third gen butterfly keyboard. We're still having issues. Yeah. Fourth gen, though, I got my eyes on fourth gen.
Well, here's another statistic. You know, like, you know, Foxconn in Guanlan, mm-hmm. I think it's called. It's called Foxconn City. It's 800,000 people, and that is the size of San Francisco.
Wow, and it's a manufacturing city. Everyone is there just to manufacture stuff, is what right. You're saying. That's unbelievable.
And a lot of, you know, the secret of Foxconn is, like, of course it's cheap, right? The labor's a lot cheaper than it is here in the U.S. But I think a lot of it has to do with the flexibility. you know, it's that they can, because they've got 800,000 people on call. You know, like the good example that people cite is when Steve Jobs changed the first iPhone from having a plastic screen to a glass screen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, overnight they woke up 10,000 workers and they switched from, you know, installing plastic screens to glass screens overnight. And it's that kind of, you know, that sort of flexibility that makes Foxconn so useful to Apple.
Wow. And they were all worried. They're like, uh-oh, here comes Horse Devil with his whip, making sure that we're using the right screen. Well, that's really interesting. And of course, if people want to read more about this stuff, I'll link to the cookbook outtakes. And did you link to your whole chapter or something here? Can people read it all if they want to?
Yeah, there are a lot. I mean, this one that we were talking about, this was like, I think it was more than 10,000 words that I split up into like three pieces. And I've actually got another piece going out tomorrow, and then two more pieces at the weekend.
And you're
like
just giving these away, right? Done.
Yeah. What I should have done, what I'm going to do is I'm going to try and make it into a magazine that you'll be able to get as part of an app.
Yeah,
you know, we have that called the Mac app.
Yeah,
it's actually quite easy to turn these stories on the site into these into an app. So it'll be like I'm planning this, and I'm hoping I have time to do it. Although I've got a really really busy schedule, but I'm hoping I'll be able to do this tomorrow. So you'll be able to download like all of this stuff in one package, and it should make a lot more sense, I think, as one package. It's a little bit disjointed on the web at the moment. But I think, and what I was going to do is I'm going to make it free to anyone who buys the book. You know, so if you buy the book, you can get this whole package, and it's really, and it looks really good on in this app. You know, this app does a great job of displaying this stuff and making it really easy to read. So I actually shouldn't have mentioned that, because now I'm committed to doing it.
That's all right. We all know that you probably won't
figure it out.
But yeah, it would be great promotion for the book. And I'll, of course, link to this story if people want to check out this chapter for free. And also, we would be remiss to not mention that your book is available for pre-sale on Amazon. People can go and order it right now. And I hesitate to say this because I don't want to fluff your feathers too much in front of all these people, but you really are a terrific writer. I wish you wrote more for Cultimat, because you write the way that you speak, which I think is rare. So it's easy to read. It's easily digestible, and it's entertaining.
Gibberish.
So, yeah, it doesn't really make much sense, and you can tell that you didn't even start writing until you had four or five beers.
Yeah, well, I think that's, well, thanks for saying that. It's nice of you to say
that. My pleasure.
I've actually gone back and looked at some of the stuff I've written. I've gone, who wrote this? And I'm like, wow, it's actually better than I remember.
This isn't nearly as terrible as I thought it was.
Yeah, I know, because I often agonize. You know, writing is kind of torture. It's agony, and I agonize over it. Like I was telling you earlier, you know, like I wrote a pitch, and I wrote a 5-minute email.
Yeah.
And then the pitch got accepted, and so I had to rewrite the email. I've been working on it for 6 hours today, you know, like really, really agonizing over it.
Oh, it was just the email that you were talking about? I thought it was the actual piece.
No, the email, I wrote this pitch email, you know, it took me 5 minutes to write it off the top of my head, you know, really, really easy. But then the piece was actually sort of basically the pitch, you know? But I didn't want to copy and what I should have done is just copy and paste the pitch, just, you know, resubmitted it with a couple of extra paragraphs. But I wanted to rewrite it, which I guess that's probably the kind of.
Oh man, you were ruining your moment of inspiration. You know, sometimes you just sit down, everything works out, and you just crank it out in a half hour, and you're done, and it's amazing. And then you go back and it's like musicians who are really good live, and then they create these studio albums that are way too overproduced.
Yeah, I know, because you overthink it.
Yeah, exactly. You overthink it.
I see this
it.
All the time as an editor. You know, like someone would pitch me a story and they turn the story in and it would just be like, oh my God, this is just, I can't publish this. It's just too much work. And so I'd trick them. I'd say, you know, I'd write them back an email and I'd ask them a few questions in email.
Uh-huh.
And they'd write back the email, and then I would just copy and paste what they put in the email into the into the story. And I'd publish that. And that's a really good trick as an editor, you know, because you're trying to, you trick people.
You trick people. That's how I made it work. You just trick them. You get them to do what you want, even when they don't want to. It's manipulation at its best, but it works.
But like you said, people, you know, like in an email, people write like they talk.
Interesting.
And I think, you know, when they come down and sit down to write, they go into this writing mode. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what comes out is this really sort of turgid and rigid and, you know, you know, flow of words that just is not as good as they wrote when they were just writing an informal email.
I feel like you're describing one of my YouTube videos now. Turgid, rigid, not informative, way overproduced.
Your emails are like, you know, like a very naturalistic.
Oh, yeah, they're short. I try to keep them short, brief. No emails or no sentences, no paragraphs more than one or two sentences, because no, ain't nobody got time to read all that.
Right. Or listen to it, yeah.
Exactly. All right, let's go ahead and wrap it up there. That's all the Cultcast we have for you guys this week, but of course, we'll have links to all the stuff in the show notes if you guys want to check out any of the stories that we mentioned in today's episode, or check out Lander's new book. And of course, if you want to come talk to us about any of the stories we talked about in today's show, we're both on YouTube. I'm at Erfon, E-R-F-O-N. Lander is at L. Kenny. This has been the Cultcast, the best 30-plus minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. New episodes of the Cultcast come out every Thursday night. So I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll see you guys next time, y'all. Oh, the Tim Cook next time. It's been a while since I've done that one. I should do that every episode. It feels so good.
Definitely, yeah.
Hello, Governor.
You can tell you're a Yankee Doodle because it's not Old Bean. I mean, that's like kind of Southern. It's Old Bean.
Oh, you got to say the D?
The D, yeah.
Cheerio, Old Bean. But how come when I hear British people say it, I don't ever hear the D? They just say ol. Maybe because they just roll it off.
I thought you could hear the D.
I guess what this means is I might be more British than you are.
Well, I think the problem is that no one has ever actually really ever said that except... You know, like in stereotypical English movie portrayals in American movies.
Well, the only people I've ever heard say it are actually British, but they're probably saying it because they know I get a kick out of when British people say British things, stereotypical British things.
I know, it never fails, does it?
Well, what a show this is going to be, huh?
Is this the first time you and I have ever done it together? Just you and me?
No, we've done it before. But it doesn't happen very often.
Okay. I mean,
A shame because when it's just the two of us, we cut out all the cruft.
Right.
And it's just the two best components.
Yeah, exactly. No filler. No sighing. No weird beard scratchy noises.
Have you ever seen that gif of when Arnold Schwarzenegger grabs the hands of that black guy in Predator and they like clasp hands and their biceps are bulging? That's like a perfect representation of what happens when it's just you and me.
Yeah. Okay. Use that as the graphic for the show this week.